Mr. George Keane, Reel 2. Now, we're talking about your time at HMS Ganges Shore Station at Shotley from July 35 through to 11th, 37. And we were going through a typical day, and some of the things you'd be on, we were obviously in signal school. Now, what we've talked about Morse. What about signal school proper? What were you learning?
Well, we had to learn the contents of signal books. That's a general term, signal books. I mean,
now what does it mean? What were you learning within it? What was it?
Well, of course, the signal books. There were different books for different subjects. The main one we did was the flags and their meanings. And to help us learn the flags, we had to make a book up with every flag. We had to draw every flag ourselves and colour it in. That was one way of learning. Unfortunately, mine is down the bottom of the North Sea somewhere. But, learn the meaning of flags.
Now, how many were... Because people don't know much about flags now. I mean, because they forget how important the signal flags were.
Yeah.
In the Second World War. They think it's all Morse and telephone.
Well, it's gone now. It's gone.
Now, how did the flag system work? Can you just talk to us a bit about the flag system and how it worked? And, how you were taught. Not how you used it when you were yeoman. But, I mean, when you were taught it. How did they try and get the system of flags across to you, other than just rote, you know, copying it out?
Well, as I say, the first thing we did was we were each given a size book. What's that size?
Exercise book, basically.
No, the size. Well, an exercise book or two, in which we drew the complete alphabet. There was a flag for every letter of the alphabet, and a flag from numbers 1 to 10, and also pennants from 1 to 10, and other pennants outside of the numbered ones with different meanings. I can give an example of that on the painting on the wall.
Yeah, they won't be able to see it. I mean, you can explain verbally, the better.
Well, flags were square, and pennants, of course, were long ones. Yeah, yeah. And then we were given examinations, written examinations on all the meanings of the flags, and we also did fleet orders.
I'll come back sticking to flags a bit. I mean, were you taught how to put them up as well?
Definitely how to put them up, yeah.
Well, and how do you? Because it's not simple, is it?
Well, it is.
I'm
going into a lot of... I assume that a lot of people know about this detail, but they don't. Each flag and pennant had what was called an Inglefield clip. One at the top, and one at the bottom, which of course we call the bottom the fly. And these clips were that shaped, and they put into one another like that. They clipped into one another like that.
Well, they interlocked.
Interlock, yes. Well, you could have a hoist of flags, of one flag on its own, or two or three, or even a dozen or so, depending what the signal was you were making. And in order to train us in hoisting flags, we had competitions, flag hoisting competitions, where you'd have two teams. An instructor would be calling out the names of the flags. Say Baker Dogs. We used we didn't refer to them as ABC. It was Abel Baker, Charlie Dog. And he'd shout them out to you, and as you put them on as fast as you could and hoist as fast as you could, two of you see, on it, against another team. And that's how we learnt to use them.
And you took to this?
Oh, yes, I took to it.
We're going through the signal school, so you had the signal books... And then one of them's the flags and pennants, and we've talked about how you used to raise them. What else were you learning at Signal School? You mentioned the orders, the naval orders.
Manoeuvres, and the fleet signal book, it was called, containing manoeuvres.
Now, how did that work?
Well, it was a description of all the various manoeuvres which could be used at sea, mostly ordered by flags or wireless. I think that's a fair description.
And so these were set manoeuvres, and there was a signal that meant...
That's right,
that.
Yes. That's right, yes, yeah.
So you had to learn them, I presume?
Oh, yes, yeah.
And were they easy? I mean...
Well, some were easy and some weren't. As like everything else, some were simpler than others.
What else were you learning?
A further aid to helping us learn the fleet manoeuvres was we'd go on the parade ground and say a dozen of us would be given our identities as a dozen ships with pennant numbers. Which was all ships had pennant numbers, so they were identified other than the name. And we'd march around the parade ground, and the instructor would shout out the flag, say blue 9, and execute, and we'd do the manoeuvre. And that's how we learnt them on the parade ground. And I must admit, as boys, we had a damn good education. You know, we were well trained. They always said that when you left the Ganges, you were either well trained or you were kicked out.
So you'd just be manoeuvring about them,
that's
pretending
right.
to be ships.
That's right. No. We had a little flag. We had a little answering flag. And if we understood the order, we hoisted it, you see. And when the instructor said execute, we brought it down and then we did the manoeuvre.
And... can you just explain a bit about this execute business? You know, because people don't understand. You don't carry out an order when the flag goes up, do you? Can you just explain it anyway?
You carry out the order for the manoeuvre when the signal is hauled down.
After you've acknowledged.
That is the executive, or the order to execute the manoeuvre. If you're going to turn 40 degrees to starboard, and you're in a straight line. When the signal to turn together 40 degrees to starboard is hauled down, that's when you carry it out.
Now, anything else you were learning in the signal part of your training?
Other than reaching the speeds for Morse and writing down and whatnot, I don't think there is anything, because it's all contained in what I've already explained.
What now? Outside of that, there's other things you might be doing in the day. Did you ever?
Do seamanship as well.
Now tell me about your seamanship training.
The seamanship training was, it was a general description of what is all the apparatus used on ships and compasses and steering.
I mean, would they make you box the compass? I mean, did you go that far, or was it just
not in the old-fashioned way, boxing a compass? I mean, we got away from that. How to use a compass? Yes, certainly. But seamanship, of course, we did the knots and spices. Oh, spices!
How far would you go with that? I mean, not as far as a seaman, I presume.
No, I don't think so. I don't think we did. It was just to give you a bit of knowledge about it. And then, of course, we had parade ground rifle drill.
Tell me about that.
The gunnery section that we did was rifle drill, pure and simple. And we had firing sessions as well with 303 rifles. Target practice. Of course, we only did a minimum of that as signalmen. We didn't do as much as a seaman would. Sports, plenty.
How well did you do with your rifle training?
Oh, on the parade ground, quite all. That didn't bother me, except in the winter when it was damn cold. If you hadn't got any gloves on. But ours was mostly ceremonial.
You didn't do much axis shooting then?
Only on a range.
And how did you do on the... were you a good shot?
Reasonably good. Reasonably good. Not amongst the top scorers. One or two were naturals.
Was there any other weapons training, infantry-style weapons, or was it just the rifle?
No, only ceremonial with a bayonet, that's all. Sticking it on the end of your rifle.
Now, one thing I wondered was whether you had any signals, any masthead drill, because you know the Ganges is famous for the masthead.
The masthead. Yeah.
Climbing the mast.
Well, just stop a minute there. Stop a minute. My first introduction to the mast was towards the end of my time in the annex, and I remember standing in front of it with the other lads early in the morning. Gazing up at the top with my knees knocking together. At the bottom of the mast was a steel net.
A safety net?
Steel safety net. And when I arrived there, somebody spilt a lot of red paint on the ground underneath it. And of course, the story was somebody fell off the top and went through the net and came out oxo cubes. And we were told that at the platform halfway up the mast, if you went straight up, there was a hole called the Lubber's Hole that you went through, but we weren't supposed to. We had to lean out and go up the shrouds, which went out at an angle. So when you look down, you got nothing underneath you. I thoroughly enjoyed going up the mast, especially in the summer.
Even the first time?
Yes, didn't bother me. Especially in the summer, when you could go up of an evening and sit up high up on the mast, and you could see for miles and miles over the estuary. The one thing I couldn't do was get up on the button at the top. I could shin up. The last 20 feet or so was a straightforward pole with signal halyards on it. I could go up the pole, touch the button, but I hadn't got the nerve to get up and stand on it.
Was there nothing to support you at all if you stood on the button at the top?
Only the lightning conductor.
Would that hold you if you slipped?
Probably stick through the middle of you.
So you didn't suffer from... you were nervous when you first saw it.
Oh,
in the event, you were all right.
Yeah, I was all right, yes. I could go up. We had to go up one side of the mast, or go up and go up one side of the mast and down the other side to qualify for what they called the passing out on the mast. You had to do it in 2 minutes.
It's not long. It's pretty high.
Some lads used to freeze halfway up, you know, and have to go up, and the instructor used to go up and fetch them down because they, you know, if they looked down and... it was 153 feet or something like that. I've got it written down somewhere, the exact height. But it was a rough introduction to heights.
Any other forms of training? Was there an assault course or any PT course?
You know? No, we had physical training in the gym. That's all.
And how tough was the PT?
Not too bad once you got into it. You were driven, mind you, by cruel instructors.
I mean, how fit were you before you went in? I mean, I know you were young. But you
well,
were young.
I suppose I was about like the average lad, you know. I used to be... running around and climbing and whatnot, and most afternoons we had sport. Cross country running I was interested in, and I achieved a fair degree of ability at swimming, but I wasn't very, and hockey, but I wasn't very interested in football. Never was interested in football.
So, I mean, anything else you'd be doing during a day's training?
No, I think in general terms, it's just about covered everything.
Now, how did you get on with the other boys?
We got on all right. After we'd sorted ourselves out, for example, I'd never met anybody from Ireland until us 40-odd were put into our classes, and one little lad there from Ireland, and we thought he was mad. Because he, when he started telling us about the wee people coming and sitting on the end of his bed during the night, you know, we never heard it. Us Southerners had never heard anything like this before. And lads that we had one or two lads from the Arethusa training ship, which was moored in the Thames, you know, yeah. And one there who'd joined because times were very hard for a lot of people in those days, and he couldn't get much to eat, and he wanted four meals a day, so he came and joined with us.
Were they all similar type of background, or was there a mixed range of background, you know?
I wouldn't say there were any great differences. The only difference we had in our particular mess was we had one lad who came from what for those days was a well-off home. And when it was his turn to do duty, dirty jobs like cleaning the drains out and whatnot, he would give one of the rest of us threepence to do it for him. Because, that brings me round to pay. I haven't mentioned pay.
Well, tell us about that then.
Well, when you first joined, you were a second-class boy. And your pay was 5 and threepence a week, out of which you were allowed to keep a shilling. And the rest, on payday, you were given your shilling and a piece of a bar of soap. The others went into your credit. I think it was 6 months. 6 months as a second class boy. I've got it on my history sheets. 6 months. And if you came up to a relevant standard, you were promoted to dizzy heights of first class boy, and your pay became 8 and 9 pence a week, and you were allowed to draw 1 and 6 pence, and the rest went into your credit. The pay that went into your credit, you could buy articles of clothing with it, because our first issue of clothing in the Navy was free, but thereafter you were given a clothing allowance, and we used it for odd things if you wanted a towel or to take home on leave or something like that. Otherwise, it accumulated until you were 18, when you became an ordinary rate.
Now, what did you do with your shilling or whatever it was? You know, I mean, not much to
well
to spend for a week.
We had a canteen.
Tell us about the canteen.
And we always paid on a Wednesday. And in the canteen, the things I remember most was bottles of pop. I don't know if you've ever seen the old-fashioned bottle of pop with dinges in the neck and a marble. So held under pressure and pushed the marble in. And they were, I think it was a penny or 3 halfpence each. And there was a very popular type of cake called a Charlie. It was about 3 inches square, half inch thick, and it was full of currants and whatnot. And so we, on Wednesday afternoon, when you got your pay, most of us really went to town. We'd go and have a bottle of pop and two Charlies. We weren't allowed to keep more than half a crown at a time in our possession, because, I mean, with a couple of thousand boys there, there's bound to be somebody amongst them who'd probably a bit light finger.
And would that be it for your money? That you'd spend it in one go, or would it?
Well, you could, yeah. Mind you, I had a mate of mine. He always used to save threepence a week. That was outstanding. Threepence a week he used to spend. Most of us, we were skint by about Friday.
And in the canteen, was there anything else to do other than eat your cake and drink your pop? I mean, was there any games or anything?
Oh, no, it wasn't that type of canteen. It was just purely a shop, and that was it.
And how did you get on with the instructors? I mean, what did you think of them generally as instructors?
Well, our two instructors were very good. It was Chief Yeoman and a Petty Officer Telegraphist. Can't remember their names now, without looking up on books and whatnot. On the whole, they were good. Some of the seamen instructors were a lot harder on their lads than what ours were. In fact, one gunnery instructor, a GI, was called the Shotley Terror. There was always a Shotley Terror, who, in our opinion, was cruel to his lads.
But your two weren't. And
oh, no, ours
two
weren't.
Not even the PT one they mentioned?
Oh, the PT, their physical training instructors were all very good. They used to chase you around and shout at you and get you going, you know. But
nothing untoward.
I mean, sometimes you needed a bit of frightening to get you to do something.
And you felt that they knew this stuff, these instructors, personally?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, they all knew this stuff, and no doubt about that, yeah. Yeah. There's one thing I'd mention in passing, and that was our kit. We had to muster our kit laid out in a certain way.
Tell me about that.
I think it was once a fortnight without checking. And our kit was laid out according to a photograph of an ideal kit in the seamanship manual. And when we washed our clothes, we had to put them on a line. We had no pegs. We used lengths of string called clothes stops. And when we rolled our kit up, it had to be rolled up. The length was the length of the seamanship manual, and it had to have two clothes stops put round, fasten it, in the width of the seamanship manual. Now, if your kit, the division officer used to come round and inspect the kit, and if you had a very good one, you would be excused from the next one. If you had a very poor one, you'd probably find yourself laying your kit out again in your spare time in the evening.
So, anything else? I mean, we seem to have covered most of it. You know, anything else in a typical day you might do, or anything else you remember about your time there?
Oh, the night before going on leave was a very exciting night. Nobody slept. They wandered around all night waiting for the catch the bus in the morning with their extra pay in their pockets. And when you went on leave, as I said, the night before was a few hours of great excitement, and you made sure that you got all your horizontal creases in your trousers that you weren't supposed to have before to make you look like an old seaman when you got home. Everybody thought you'd been about 20 years at sea and you're only 16.
And you'd go home?
You go home on leave, yes. Yeah, most of the boys did. Of course, some of them had no homes. One or two of us had no homes, but there used to be an organisation in London there that used to go to. I can't remember the name of it now.
Did you make an impression when you went back home with your family or with... I mean, you weren't supposed to have gone. I mean, you know, they hadn't signed your papers. With family or with friends?
Oh, well, they used to... sometimes you think you've never been away. One thing I found when I started going home was the way in which we were trained at Ganges, and we had so much unusual experience in, say, the first 6 months before you went on leave, that you lost contact with all your mates and that you had before. You've grown beyond them. And when you I know it might seem strange to say so, but say halfway through your leave or so, you look forward to going back. Not everybody did. I mean, one or two never came back at all.
But you did.
Oh, I did, yeah.
You wanted to get back.
Yeah.
Now, so what happened next? Take me, you're going through your first year. You know, anything happened? Any other stories of life at Ganges?
No, I don't think so. I went through all my exams and did all right in
those.
Now,
tell me about the examinations. How did they test you and everything?
Well, you had written tests and verbal tests as well on practically everything. Everything you could think of while you were there. And I went through all right. And the only difference that... different things we might have done other than a normal training was, I think it was a month before we went to sea, we were issued with a hammock, and we had to make all our rope gear for holding the hammock up. We did it all ourselves with knots and splices, and then you were issued with a bed, and of course before you went to sea, you learnt to lash a hammock up properly with the seven turns as well.
So before you left, started sleeping in the hammocks while you were at...
No, we didn't sleep in the hammocks. We prepared them ready to go to sea. So that the day came when you went to sea, you had your kit bag and your hammock.
But you hadn't been to sea at all while you were at Shotley then? They never...
Only for a few hours on a duty destroyer out of Harwich, that's all.
Tell me about that. What was that like? That was your first time properly at sea?
First time properly at sea. Mind you, we did a lot of boat work at Ganges. That's one thing you see, we were taught to sail.
Well, tell us about that before we go on.
Initially, we were taught to sail in 12 oar cutters. An instructor used to take us out, and... we used to, when we got a reasonable standard of being able to row, we entered into competitions whereby we sailed for about a half a mile, and on the order being given, we downsails, took the mast down, out oars and rowed. Obstacle cutters, it was called. Obstacle cutters, competitions. And
did you enjoy them?
Oh yes, I always enjoyed sailing. I remember in one race we were doing, in our effort to get the mast up quick, I was running along on top of oars which were wet, and they parted, and I fell down and knocked my shin on one of the thwarts, you know, the seats. And it raised a bump about 3 inches high, which didn't bleed. So I had to go down the sick bay, and the doctor says, "Grit your teeth, lad," and just drew, cut it open to let all the blood. It's got a big scar there now. And the highlight of my sailing career at the Ganges was when I was considered good enough to be issued with a submarine sweater at 6 o'clock in the morning and go sailing in a whaler. And once you got a sail and a whaler, that was very, very good indeed.